Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for returning. And we have an opportunity to learn together another topic related to Hanukkah. Okay, so welcome, everyone. All right, we're going to begin with the Gemara in Shabbos, in source number one, a very, very famous Gemara that really depicts the evolution of how it is that we, good evening, how it is that we light Hanukkah candles today. We're very used to going into the store, purchasing a menorah. Now we also purchase, of course, the break-off things, because God forbid we should fill a canister with oil or insert a wick. So now we just cut ourselves as part of the Hanukkah experience. Baruch Hashem, all you need is oil and a menorah and gauze, and you're ready to go. But as we know, so we're very used to the Hanukkah lighting and its normative way. You just light the first night one, the second night two, the third night three. We sing, we eat lakets, we have donuts, and everything is wonderful. The Gemara tells us the following. Tana Rabbanan. So let's look at the very first source. Tana Rabbanan, mitzvahs Hanukkah ner ishu beisa. That actually, fundamentally, the mitzvah of Hanukkah does not require all these candles, requires simply one candle per household, per night. That is the core mitzvah of Hadlakas Neros on Hanukkah. And the purpose of that candle is to remind us of the miracle that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, with the menorah that, by the way, did not have eight lights. How many lights did the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash have? Seven lights, right? Our menorah has eight because it's really meant to connect to the Chag itself. And there is a tremendous amount of discussion with regards to the relationship between our mitzvah to light the menorah and the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash itself. There are some similarities in terms of what halacha sort of exports from the mitzvah of the Beis HaMikdash to the Hanukkah experience we have. And there are obviously some differences, most notably, how many candles we're lighting. We do not light seven candles, we light eight. In fact, we're not even supposed to construct a menorah that has seven candles, and that we'll discuss for another time. So the mitzvah is Nerishu Beisu, Vahamehadrin. So let's say you want to do the mitzvah in its exceptional manner. You want to be really mehudar, which means to beautify the mitzvah. The mehadrin ner l'chol echad b'echad. So then every person, still, no chanukiah, no eight candles, every person gets one candle each night in the household. So now the parsume nisa, the publicity of the miracle, is not simply based on the household itself, but each individual within the household personalizes this experience, and now everybody is lighting on there, l'chol echad v'echad. V'amahadrin min amahadrin. So let's say you live in Passaic, New Jersey. So you're not going to just do what's required. And you're not just going to do what's mahadrin. That's for, we won't say, right? You're mamish, you're holding. You know, you need the real Brooklynish, you know, like, I need like what you get in the mahadrin, mina mahadrin, the best of the best. So what do they do? So that's a machlokas tanoim. Beis Shammai Omrim, everybody agrees that in the mahadrin, mina mahadrin phase, we are going to account for each individual night. But there's a machlokas, how we do that. Beis Shammai Omrim, yom rishon madlik shmona. The first night you light eight candles, mikan ve'elech, poches ve'holich. From that night onwards, you light one less. So eight, seven, five. So you count down. It's like a countdown. It's very exciting, right? Like top 10, you know, like it's a, you're counting down. Save the best for last. So you start the night with eight, and then by the time Hanukkah ends, you're done. So that's the opinion of Beis Shammai. What is the opinion of Beis Hillel? The Benya Beis Hillel is Yom Rishon Madlik Achas. On the first day we light one. Mikan ve'elech Mosif v'holich. And then each night we ascend in the intensity of the lights and we add one. And we're all familiar, that's what we do. We do the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. Not only do we do the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin, even though we know, as Jews, that the halachic system certainly has embedded within it sort of concentric circles of intensity in terms of how we relate to halacha in its stringency. So some people will do things that are very machmir all the time. Some people will be machmir in certain situations, not in other situations. But we all know the halakhic system has certain core requirements. And then people often, they will be more pious, more careful, more anxious. It depends what's driving that particular chumrah. Are you being machmir because you want to account for more opinions? Are you being machmir because you want to do it a little better? Why are you being machmir? All these, and there are different situations that have different, there are plenty of seats, that have different considerations. What's unique about Hanukkah, and what's unique about the menorah, is that it is virtually universally accepted that we all observe the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. And that's part of what we're going to talk about tonight. That this is one of those mitzvos where you will not go to any Jewish community and observe people just with one candle per household. You will not go to any Jewish home and observe everybody lighting one candle. It is a situation where everybody is Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. Everybody goes with the highest level possible. Once in a while, when we're in an exceptional situation, somebody's in a hotel, or somebody's, you know, somebody asked me last year about lighting Hanukkah candles on an airplane, right? So some, you know, I don't recommend that. Neither does the FAA. So there are sometimes very exceptional situations, but the bottom line is, that the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin is virtually ubiquitous. And the Gemara then goes on to talk about different explanations for Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whether or not it has to do with the amount of days coming into Hanukkah, going out of Hanukkah, whether we parallel Hanukkah to Sukkot, where the karbonos are offered in a descending numeric configuration, or whether or not we evoke the very famous principle of ma'alin b'kodesh ve'ein moridin, that we always ascend in sanctity and we never descend in sanctity. And so therefore, the Gemara has a whole discussion. But suffice it to say, everybody pretty much does mahadrin mina mahadrin. Then there is a debate amongst the Rishonim as to why precisely what the parameters of this Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin was. Because let's understand something. There were three phases, right? Phase one was one candle per household. Phase two was everybody lights one candle, right? Not just per household, everybody lights one candle. Phase three is you light from 1 to 8. So the question debated in the Rishonim is phase three modifying phase one and redefining it, or is phase three building on phase two? And this is a machlokas between Tosis and the Rambam. If you look at source number two, what does Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin mean, says Tosis? Nira Luri, it appears to the Balei HaTosis, the Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, Lo Kaimi Ela Aner Ishu Beisa. They are qualifying the fundamental stage. So when we say that you light from 1 to 8, not everybody lights from 1 to 8, only the Balabayas lights from 1 to 8, or the Balatabayat lights from 1 to 8. Whoever is lighting candles for this home lights from 1 to 8, one set. What happened to the Ner L'chol Echad B'Echad? So says Tosis, it's not logical that the Gemara wanted you to do that as well. Because the whole point of going from 1 to 8 is to be able to recognize the intensifying reality of the miracle. So you know when you look into the home that this is night 1. No, the oil didn't just last for 1, it lasted for 2. Oh, now we go by the house, it lasted for 3. Then we go by the house, it lasted for 4. So because you see the menorah ascending, that depicts the miracle, that conveys the growth of the miracle, the greatness of the miracle. Says Tosis, if you're doing this with different people in the house, then you'll never know whether or not you have more candles because it's a later night, or whether or not you have more candles because there are just more people there, right? Sometimes people have Hanukkah parties, and lots of people come over, and people are lighting, Sometimes you always have, right? The kid comes home with the clay, piece of clay, Hanukkah. This is a tremendous gift from the preschool teacher association, right? Which inevitably, as soon as you place it on the thing, by night two, it is cracked in half. And there's already a fissure, you know, going for the third. So now you're trying to hold this thing together. And there's tape and there's glue and other clay, right? And you have all the different menorahs that go on. I remember that we once did a NCSY Shabbaton in a hotel on Hanukkah. And we had 400 people there. So what I tried to do is, Baruch Hashem, the way it would work out is, we were never in the same hotel for many years at a time. That had nothing to do with Hanukkah. At Baruch Hashem, the teens were very good at making sure there was a hischadshus in terms of where we could be. So they would always contribute some sort of behavior that would result in us ending up having the opportunity to find another beautiful resort in the Catskills to make our imprint on. So every once in a while, there would be a Hanukkah, and this, it would just fall out that way. So my mahalach was always to just sort of tell them it was Hanukkah, not really mention the candles of the menorah, and then when the hotel came downstairs and saw like 1,500 candles burning, and they come up to me and they'd be like, well, you can't do this. I'd be like, really? I told you it was Hanukkah. I mean, like, I thought you knew that we would ever. So then we would put people to watch all the menorahs and everybody would guard them, and it made everybody very nervous. But this was so that nobody would light in their homes. In later years, we would light by group, and then it got very exciting. So there's a story I love to tell from that Yarchei Kala. We once had a Shabbaton full of public school students in Stamford, Connecticut, and it was over Hanukkah. And we taught the kids all about the dreidel. We explained to them that why do we play with the dreidel, right? Because we're trying to explain like why we're gambling with Cheerios. So, and why that's Jewish. So we told them, you know, what used to happen is the Greeks, the Jewish people would study Torah, and then the Greeks would come, and they'd discover them studying Torah. So they would close the books, and they'd take out the dreidels, and it was like a subterfuge so that they wouldn't discover what they were really doing. So later that night, So there was always a group of kids who were like unbelievably into it, like, you know, they'd stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning learning. They would like, I mean, these were like outrageously inspired kids. They all eventually moved to Passaic. And, no, they don't dive in here though. They were always very into it. So I remember there was a group that liked to learn like late into the night. So it was like 11:30 at night, and we had done the checks on all the rooms, and the head advisors came up to me and they said, we're missing 6 kids from the room. So that we got really nervous. That's not a good thing in a hotel. So we start searching the whole hotel. No one could find these kids. And it's getting later and later. It's about like 12:30 in the morning. And I happen to hear some noise coming from a closet, which is also really not a good thing at a Shabbaton. And I open the door to the closet, and 6 kids close their sforim and take out dreidels. So I look at them and I said, okay, you could stay up another hour. You know, like, they don't eat in my house. So anyway, so Tosa says, it's got to be that it's 1 to 8, and it's 1 to 8, only 1 menorah. The Rambam is of a completely different opinion. The Rambam says, if you look at source number 3, kama neros hu madlik b'chanukah, how many neros do you light on Chanukah? Mitzvah shiyah kol bayis hu bayis madlik ner echad. The base mitzvah is everybody lights 1. One per household. Ben shuan she abayis merubin, ben shelo yuboel adam echad. Whether your house is full of people or you only have 1 person. By mahadris a mitzvah, madlik neros, kiminyan anshe abayis. So if you want to be mahadrin in the mitzvah, you light the amount of candles like there is in the home. Ner lecho echad v'echad. Ben anoshim, ben noshim. Whether it's men or women, equal. Mahadir Yoser, and if you want to be Mahadrin min a Mahadrin, but also mitzvah min a Mufchar, you want to do the mitzvah the best, Madlik Ner L'chol Echad Belaila Harishon, Madlik Ner L'chol Echad, everybody lights a candle, Belaila Harishon, Umosif Aholech B'chol Laila Laila Ner Echos. Acher, Echad, and Acher, sorry. Then the Rambam says, he does the math for you. Ketzad, how does that work? Harishu Anshe Abayas Asarif, you have 10 people. On the first night, you light 10 candles. On the second night, you light 20 candles. On the third night, you light 30 candles. On the fourth night, you light 40 candles. So what's clear from the Rambam? Not like Tosfos, that every single person in the home who is lighting, lights from the beginning all the way till the end. The Shulchan Aruch, in a very, very interesting situation, which is always noticed historically, generally in Shulchan Aruch, the Balei HaTosfos are from Ashkenaz. They're from Germany and France, right? They're from Ashkenaz. The Rambam is generally the posek for Sfarad. So usually what happens when there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos is that the Shulchan Aruch, who's the Beis Yosef, who's from the Sephardic tradition, will paskin like the Rambam. And the Ramah from Krakow would paskin like the Balei HaTosfos. In this sugya, curiously, those shitos are reversed. And the Taz actually takes note of this. So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, Kamen eros madlik belayla arishon madlik echad, you light one. Mikan ve'elech mosif v'holech echad b'chol layla. Ashbel achron yushmona. Afilu im rabim b'nei abayis lo yadliku yoser. And even if there are many people in the home, you don't light more than that. Then the Ramah, who we generally paskin like, or I shouldn't say we, Ashkenazim paskin like, if there are Ashkenazim in the room, everybody in the home lights. And then the Ramah adds a line, the Ramah says, but when you light a lot of menorahs, right? So sometimes you're going to light a lot of menorahs, you should spread them out, so that it's identifiable that each menorah corresponds to a different individual. Why does the Ramah suggest that? Because the Ramah says Tosfos' whole concern here was that when you look at the house, you can't tell the difference. You can't tell the difference if it's one night one, night two, and night three, or whether or not you're just very popular and you have a lot of people in your house. So says the Ramah, you really can account for that. And that is, just make sure that you give designated spaces for these different places. So, in source number 5, the Minchas Meir raises the following question. That's really what we're going to explore this evening. And that is, what is the nature of this mitzvah, of Neros Chanukah, that Hidur mitzvah became so part and parcel of the mitzvah itself? There are many, many mitzvahs that we do throughout the year. Hilchas Shofar, dealing with matzah, and yes, we have chumras that we observe about all these mitzvos, there's no question. We blow 100 kolos, we, you know, try to get all the different shitos of how a matzah should look, but the substantiation of the higher level observance as a normative standard is something that is unique to Chanukah. The notion that Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin is presented in its character as something that's extra, but is institutionalized in its practice as something that's expected and fundamental is unique to Chanukah. And the question is, why is that so? There's really no other, even where we find the word Hadar that comes up again, which is in the pre-Eitz Hadar, when we talk about the Esrog. So yeah, we all go to the Esrog sale and we sit there with the magnifying glass looking for the Esrog without the black dot, with the black dot, with the black dot, right? And we're all trying to find the perfect Esrog. But at the end of the day, you can buy a perfectly kosher Esrog. There are chumras to Esrog. But nobody would suggest that the Hidurim of Esrog are required for the core observance. We don't tell people who are first becoming observant or people who have very little funds or people who just can't handle some of the more intense expectation of Torah and mitzvot, on Chanukah you could light one. We don't do that. We give it our all. We do mamish everything. So today we have a lot of different pieces of the Chanukah observance that's made it, you know, easier. We don't want to, you know, deal with all the mess and all that, so we have a lot of these disposable everything. Now, I was thinking in the non-Jewish world, this is true also. I don't know if you're driving down the street now, so they no longer have to hang lights, right? Now they could just project lights onto the homes. It's like, this is their version of breaking the oil. You know what I'm saying? So like, everybody's, you know, the Muslims, they work hard. So so that's the question. The question is, why does Hiddur Mitzvah become part and parcel of Hanukkah? And how is that part of the experience of Hanukkah? So in the Minchas Meir, the Minchas Meir introduces the concept of Hiddur Mitzvah. So we have a pasuk in the Torah, and that pasuk is Zeh Keli V'Anvehu. We say it every day in Az Yashir. This is my God, and I will beautify him. What does that mean, that I'll beautify God? So the Gemara says, Hisnoya Lefanav B'Mitzvos, that I am going to beautify the connection and the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through mitzvos. Meaning that when I encounter the opportunity to do a mitzvah, I will do it in the most beautiful way possible. And so therefore, we have a concept of Hiddur Mitzvah. And that concept applies to all mitzvos. And it's the notion that we try to do a mitzvah in a beautiful way. When we build a shul, there are hidurim. We try to build a shul in a beautiful way. We try to build a parochas in a beautiful way. This is not just being materialistic. This is trying to do things in a way that is beautiful. There's a concept of Hiddur Mitzvah. Rav Schechter always talks about there's Hiddur Mitzvah with Talmud Torah. That when we learn Torah, we should learn from texts and presentations and organization that's put together in a beautiful way. There's a concept of Hiddur Mitzvah. We try to buy beautiful tefillin. We try to make sure we have nice tzitzis. We try to get a beautiful candelabra for Nero Shabbos. We have the concept of Hiddur Mitzvah. We build our sukkah. We have all sorts of things that we try to do for Hiddur Mitzvah. A beautiful siddur. That's the mitzvah of Hiddur Mitzvah. But what's important to understand is that the mitzvah of Hiddur Mitzvah is independent to all of the actual requirements of the mitzvahs. In other words, you have your core requirements of the mitzvahs themselves, and then you add this additional layer, this additional institution called Hiddur Mitzvah, which then gets applied to those mitzvahs. So it's not a kiyum in Hilchas Tefillin to buy nicer tefillin. It's you buy kosher tefillin, and if you buy nicer tefillin, so you've done Hiddur Mitzvah. That's a separate and independent concept. The Minchas Meir says that there is a possibility that when it comes to Neros Chanukah, that there are two different ways to look, two different conceptual ways to view the Hiddur Mitzvah that applies relative to Chanukah. One possibility is that we simply take this extraneous requirement of Hiddur Mitzvah that applies in the rest of the Torah, and we institutionalize, we mandate it as it applies to Neros Chanukah. We tell you, you must do. Usually Hiddur Mitzvah is optional. Usually Hiddur Mitzvah is personal. Usually Hiddur Mitzvah is based on your own initiative. In Neros Chanukah, you must import the Hiddur Mitzvah. The other possibility, says the Minchas Meir, is that conceptually Chanukah is designed differently. That Chanukah, in contrast to all other mitzvos, that Neros Chanukah, as embedded within the mitzvah itself, is part of what defines the mitzvah itself, a requirement of Hiddur. That it's a foundational component of what it means to light Chanukah candles. What it means to light Chanukah candles, the mitzvah is to light Neros of Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. That the Hiddur becomes part and parcel of the mitzvah itself. And he wants to suggest that this could even somewhat explain the demachlokes between Tosis and the Rambam. That if you view the purpose of the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin as building off of the original mitzvah, so that conceptually means that you're viewing the Hiddur Mitzvah that you're viewing the Hiddur Mitzvah as something that is a general Hiddur Mitzvah. In other words, we told you first you should do this Hiddur, now we're telling you you should do that Hiddur. But if you view the situation like the Rambam, where it's this incremental growth in Hiddur, that's because the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah has this very special and unique dimension to it, where Hiddur Mitzvah becomes part of the experience itself. And it's important to try to understand what is the difference in terms of our observance of Chanukah, in terms of how we relate to the Chag itself, between suggesting that our Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin comes from the original mitzvah versus our mahadrin min hamahadrin is part of the incremental growth. So the Maharal writes in source number 6, when he's explaining the Shita of Beis Hillel, that one of the perspectives that is critical to understanding the experience of Hanukkah is its incremental growth. In other words, the message of Hanukkah is not exclusively that there was a nes or there wasn't a nes. It's not just a binary, spiritual, like, it's not like Yetzias Mitzrayim. You have to believe Yetzias Mitzrayim happened. It either happened or it didn't happen. Pesach is about affirming our faith and belief and absolute certitude that it happened. And it happened and it was transformational for the Jewish people. Hanukkah is not just about saying that we affirm that this miracle happened. Rather, Hanukkah, to the Maharal, is also about understanding the difference between miracles as they occur initially and the exponential meaning that grows with appreciating their increasing intensity over time. And very often, if you think about it, that is one of the greatest challenges we have, because we look around our lives and we look around the world and we see things that are beyond normative. We see things that are miraculous, that are out of rational explanation, and we habituate to their presence. We say to ourselves, you know, how many of us woke up this morning and said to ourselves, I don't understand. There's a state of Israel living in the Middle East where, you know, a few million Jews are surrounded by 200 million people who don't agree with them being there. And like, they're a baldea on what's going on. We're this week, we're celebrating the UN vote, the 70th anniversary of the UN vote. We talked about it on Shabbos a little bit. You know, the whole thing is a miracle. The whole thing's a walking miracle. But very often, when it comes to miraculous realities in our life, we relate to them once, and then that's it. Then we take them for granted, right? When a person, let's say, has a child and there are major complications and major health issues, and somehow, inexplicably, the situation resolves itself, and everyone says, it's amazing, we davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we had a miracle. But it's one thing to appreciate the miracle when it happens. It's another thing to allow oneself to continuously understand that the miracle of the survival and thriving of that child and that adult today is as miraculous as it was the day this happened. So that says the Maharal, part of the message of Hanukkah is to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in our lives, not simply at that burst of revelation, where it becomes something that we feel is amazing, but that we should relate to it on an ongoing basis and appreciate the ways in which that is relevant and that is part of our faith day to day. So when we talk about Mosif V'Holech, we're talking about not just increasing, not just Mosif V'Holech, not just increasing off of the original foundation. We're talking about everyone embracing a reality of Mosif V'Holech. And that is the world of the Rambam. That is the world of building up Hanukkah from stage one, where we recognize the nes. Stage two, everyone recognizes the nes. Stage three, everyone not recognizes the nes all the time. And that's the vision of the Hidur and Mahadrin of Hanukkah, in that in order to convey, there are a lot of holidays that celebrate miracles. Sukkot celebrates miracles. Pesach celebrates miracles. Purim celebrates miracles. Hanukkah in its Hidur has an extra dimension. And that is, it's not only related to the moment of miracle, it's related to that miracle's continuous impact and influence and reverberating relevance in our lives as time goes on. And that is the world of Hanukkah building off of that. The Meshech Chachma in Baal Oscha talks about a very different question. The Meshech Chachma and Baal Oscha wants to know in source number 7, when the Torah tells us that Aaron HaKohen had the privilege of lighting the menorah in the Mishkan. So it says, Daber el Aaron, that Aaron was the one to light it in the Mishkan. So the Meshech Chachma quotes the Gemara in Yuma, that hadlaka lava voda v'kshera bizar, that the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was allowed to be lit by even someone who wasn't a Kohen. And the Tosas Yeshanim asks, how is that possible? It says, Daber el Aaron. It really sounds like it belongs to Aaron. And we know the famous Rashi, that Aaron was very upset. He wasn't involved in the Chanukah Sanasiyim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to give you something special. You're going to be Madlik Umeitiv Asanero. So it sounds like Aaron is really involved here. So the Meshech Chachma resolves this question by saying, you don't understand. The reason why Aaron's very involved is because anytime you're dealing with the dedication of the Mishkan, the dedication of the menorah, that's a different level. That requires an Aaron HaKohen. And so therefore, the initial experience required an Aaron HaKohen. So it's been suggested that when we look at the experience of Hanukkah, so that too required this extra dimension of tahara, this extra dimension of kahuna, because there was this notion that we were rededicating the mikdash, right? And so part of the message of Hanukkah is not just this incremental growth, but also the ability, the capacity to return to fundamentals that have become corrupted over time, that have become infiltrated by extraneous and external, you know, influences over time, and to redefine them, to rededicate them, to clean them out, and to reshape them, to be able to begin again, not just continue and fix it, but begin again. So that's part of the message of Hanukkah. And that Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin is based off of the original Ner Ishu Beso. Because it's not just about climbing up. It's not just about incremental growth. It's about redefining the foundation. There's an interesting halachic distinction made between whether or not we view the Hidur Mitzvah as part of the Mitzvah of Hanukkah or as a normative Hidur Mitzvah. And that is, do you make a bracha on the Hidur Mitzvah itself? When would you ever make a bracha on the Hidur Mitzvah itself? So let's say it's Hanukkah lighting time and all of a sudden you open the box and you don't have enough candles, right? Or sometimes it happens in our house. It's the wrong color configuration, right? Which is ke'ilu, you don't have enough candles. Because I will not use a white one, no matter what. That is the biggest loser Hanukkah candle color imaginable, unless, or I have created a sequence that goes blue, orange, green, blue, orange, green, blue, orange, green. And any disruption of this sequence will result in all-out war with everybody around me, which can only be mitigated if that happens to be the night that you bought the big present, right? And then you could hold something over. But if it's like the Uno deck, you're done, right? You're basically done. So, right? So sometimes we don't have all the candles. We can't, right? So let's say you don't have all the candles. So, okay. So you light the one candle. You can't do the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. It's still a kosher lighting. Even though everyone's required to do the best every night, it's still kosher. So if you don't have, so then you light the candles. So you light the candles, and then someone shows up at the house, and they have more candles. So now what do? So now you should add candles. It's a Parsumei Nisa. There's no reason not to add more candles. So the question discussed in the poskim is, do you make a bracha when you light the rest of those candles, right? So if the Hidur Mitzvah, and that's a machlokas aposkim, between the Elyeh Rabba and the Pri Chadash. And the question relates to what really is the nature of that Hidur Mitzvah. If that Hidur Mitzvah is just the general requirement of Hidur Mitzvah, like having a nicer esrog, but you have to do it with Hanukkah, so then you already did the Mitzvah, and you didn't do it with the Hidur. So it's over. That's it. So you light the rest of the candles because it's nice, because you want your eight crazy nights. But you don't go ahead and make a bracha on those candles because the mitzvah's over. But the suggestion of some poskim is that no, that you would actually make another bracha, lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. Why? Because you are really doing the mitzvah again. You are doing a kosher Chanukah lighting. Why? Because the Mahadrin is part and parcel of the mitzvah itself. And so what we need to understand is, here we see that the Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin permeates so many aspects of our relationship to Hadlokas Neros. Why is it, or what is it about Hidur that became such a part of the Hanukkah story and the Hanukkah observance? Why is that? So the Beis HaLevi, in source number 11, a very famous Beis HaLevi, which basically says, you know why Hidur Mitzvah became such an integral component of the holiday of Hanukkah? Because the entire miracle was built around Hidur Mitzvah. Why was the entire miracle built around Hidur Mitzvah? So says the Beis HaLevi, very simple. When they walked into the Beis HaMikdash, they found a flask of kosher oil, right? And there was only one flask that had all the hashkachas, right? It had OU, it had Chavkei, it had Badatz, it had, right? Everything ready to go. Had every Admor imaginable, right? Couldn't even see it. They said oil. It was covered in Hebrew letters. Like the Twizzlers, when they stick on the sticker of the, of some guy in Brooklyn, right? So, you had the one flask of oil. So says the Beis HaLevi, what do you need this miracle for? It's very simple. Take the wick. There's no requirement in Halacha for the wick to be of a certain thickness. So take the wick, cut the wick into an eighth, and simply use shorter wicks. If you use shorter wicks, you will consume less oil. So says the Beis HaLevi, that would have been a perfect solution. They should have walked up to the Beis HaMikdash. You have no right to wait for a miracle, and you have no right to light the menorah in a way that's not going to last. So instead of having a big, beautiful gezunta flame, like a really good, havdalah flame that really burns really nice, so cut the wick down to very, very small, and it'll be that little pizzle of flame, like with the tzvat candles when they get like kind of down and like you're sort of like Bar Maria Aish and you kind of can't even like feel the heat anymore, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? And then eventually everybody has the same thing. You go through one of those candles and then you go back to the blue and whites one from Pathmark. Then you're like, these are ugly. So then you get a tzvat candle and then you remember that, there's no fire, right? Then you go back to the other one. This is the way the world works. So the flame will be tiny. So what? That's acceptable. So says the Beis HaLevi that they were not willing to do that. Why weren't they willing to do that? Because since they had just fought this war for the Tahara and for the glory of the Beis HaMikdash, they were unwilling to compromise in any way, shape, or form in the grandeur of the mitzvah of dealing with the Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore, they refused to cut down these wicks. And that is the whole reason why they needed the miracle in the first place. So says the Beis HaLevi, the entire experience of lighting that menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was in and of itself an expression of passion for Hidur Mitzvah. So that's the reason why the Hidur dimension became immortalized within the mitzvah itself. So every single year we light Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. Why do we do the highest level? Because that's what they did. When they walked into the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't compromise. They didn't say, let's get away with, the least possible thing we can get away with. Rabbi, just tell me if it's okay, right? That's not what they did. They said, we want to do it the best way possible. We want to have that sense of connection. And so therefore, Hidur Mitzvah became part and parcel of the mitzvah itself. I want to share with you an idea that really comes from Rav Kook, which I saw developed in Rav Druckman's Sefer, based on a Maharal as well. And it also gives us an amazing insight into the role of Mahadrin in the menorah. And that is that the Maharal discusses the fact that we very often focus on how permeating Greeks were in completely ravaging the Beis HaMikdash, right? That they were timu kol hashmanim, and it was just, they trashed the Beis HaMikdash. So the Maharal says that the emes is that it's true that when they walk into the Beis HaMikdash, they saw it, completely assaulted. However, there are two other things that are true. Number one, they only got as far as the Heichal itself. They were not able to get in and do anything to and corrupt the Kodesh HaKadosh. As well, the fact that this jar of oil was discovered represents the fact that that there was some inner sanctity of the Mikdash whose core was not assaulted. Meaning, the Greeks' destruction of the Mikdash was on some level superficial. It was material. It did not reach the essence of what the Beis HaMikdash actually was. The Pach Shemen represents the internal essence of what the Beis HaMikdash ultimately was. And then, if you look at source number 13, Rav Kook says so beautifully, Hagoyim timu es hayahados agluyo b'magam. These people, these Yevanim, they were able to be metame, they were able to defile the Judaism that they saw in front of them. People's behaviors, people's intellectual pursuits, people's Torah observance, people's Torah learning, these were all religious experiences that were presented in front of them. Aval b'kdushasam nisharu pnimius hasodos shebahem. But part of the message of Hanukkah is that at the end of the day, they were not able to penetrate all the way inside. There was enough of a pintle yid within all these Jews. There was enough of a spark. There was enough of a purity that was completely blocked, completely protected, completely pure from being affected by the surrounding infiltrating culture that allowed for the Jewish people to be able to summon that inner strength and ultimately rise up against everybody that was around them. Upnimius zu, shehi nishmas haneshama ha'elyona, that's our inner soul. Kivua hi b'neshama hasigulit asher li Yisrael. What that part that is not susceptible to any attack by any of our enemies, physical or spiritual, is the element of the Jewish people that relates to their destiny, to their segula, to their uniqueness, to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them here. Part of the message of Hanukkah is about the eternality of the Jewish people. You see, in Purim, so the Jewish people were attacked, and they physically, or threatened to be attacked physically, and they repelled this attack. In Hanukkah, they were much more successful. They weren't just attacked. They were impacted. They were influenced. Something happened here. They were affected, but not completely affected, because the Jewish people were able to ultimately push back. The Jewish people were able to ultimately succeed. And so, therefore, says Rav Kook, part of what Hanukkah represents is the inner ability of the Jew to always transcend the world around them and everything that's coming to attack us. And if you look at source number 14, this is from an unpublished lecture of Rav Huttner that I found in one of Rav Stolper's Sfarim. Rav Stolper was the founder of NCSY, an amazing, amazing tzaddik, 100% responsible for me being here. I'm very close to my parents. So Rabbi Stolper has a whole development from Rav Huttner, who basically said the whole purpose of the menorah, of the holiday of Hanukkah, was to move this recognition of the inner enduring essence of the Jewish people from the world of the Mikdash to the world of the Jewish home. Because that is where the battle would ultimately be fought in the next phase of Golus, in the phase that we are in. And we all know that to be true. Because you could have as inspiring of a shul as you want, you could have as inspiring of a school as you want, you could have as many Shabbatunim as you want. If you cannot create an atmosphere in a home, in a bias, that resonates with the values of Torah and the values of what it means to be a Jew, it becomes very, very difficult for anybody to be able to nurture that sense of Jewish identity. And so therefore, the menorah is about being a Jew. And the truth is, the menorah itself is iconic throughout Jewish history as the symbol of the Jewish people for this very reason. Josephus talks about this, the fact that it is on one of the most visible and recognizable elements of the Arch of Titus. It becomes part of the symbols of the State of Israel in source number 16, in source 17, This is from an article related to the adoption of the menorah, the ancient seven-branch candelabrum, as the official emblem of the State of Israel in 1949, as an excellent example of an icon that functions as a bridge between two periods. The selection of this ancient object for the design of the new state's emblem represents the state's claim for historical continuity from antiquity and underscores its role as a custodian of the Jewish national memory. In other words, not only is it from the Mikdash, not only is it in the home, but in today's contemporary world, it has been moved forward into the consciousness of the state, which Be'ezras Hashem is taking us even further. And so, therefore, that's part of what Hidur is about in Hanukkah. Hidur is about not just looking at the surface requirements, not just looking at the basic requirements about summoning something from the inside. When a person is mahader something, when they beautify something, they personalize it. They bring their own initiative to it. It's not mandated and required. It's who you are. It comes from an inner essence. Everybody buys a pair of tefillin that's kosher. These are the ones that I want. Everybody buys an esrog that's kosher. This is the one that I want. That's part of what Hanukkah is about. Tapping into a person's inner ratzon, really deep sense of connection to who they are in terms of their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because ultimately that is what brings us. That's what the B'nai Yisachar writes, that Ner Chanukah, Ner Chinuch, Hergel La'or Olam, B'geula Asidah, Shizgal Or Agonuz. That Chanukah represents the light that was at creation, that was hidden, and is reclaimed ultimately in the redemption. And Hanukkah is a glimmer of that light. What does that mean? It means the notion that the Jewish people could go through history and they could be attacked and there could be pogroms and there could be all sorts of attempts. There could be haskalas and there could be all sorts of attempts to try to, you know, ultimately assault their identity and who they are. But at the end of the day, what Hanukkah is about is an everlasting reality that the core of who we are is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Yevanim cannot get there. Is the Pach Shemen. The Yevanim cannot get there. And when you access that Pach Shemen, miraculously, it can, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we have the proactivity and the initiative to make it part of our Avodas Hashem, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a miraculous situation where we're able to ultimately allow it to endure far beyond its natural means. And that's what it means to have a world of Hanukkah and to be Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin. Here at Zon, that we should all find the inspiration as we light the Hanukkah candles this year to connect to this inner sense of identity of who we are, to allow that to drive our sense of connection and initiative, and for it to permeate all aspects of our Avodas Hashem. Have a wonderful night.